Welcome back to Fan Wonderland, and it's time to fall down the rabbit hole with us again. I'm TJ, and today we have with us the youngest producer to have a number one film with The Grey, starring Liam Neeson, A.D. Shankar. While A.D.'s name may not ring a bell for some of our listeners, simply mention his controversial Power Rangers fan film that was in the news in 2015 because it was too dark and violent, or the 2012 film Dredd, starring Carl Urban as the eponymous hero, and you know exactly who A.D. is. Someone who refuses to stick to Hollywood's idea of normal, and that's what has made him so popular. Thanks for giving us your time today, A.D.
Thanks for that intro.
You're welcome. First things first, let's talk about Castlevania Season 2. How did you initially become part of the project, and can you tell us anything about the upcoming season?
So, really, that Power Rangers short film that you referenced earlier was the reason Castlevania came into existence. I was going to quit. Was the Power Rangers short, and it came out, and when it came out, obviously, there was a pretty intense, insane response, which I did not expect. But then Netflix reached out to me on Twitter, went in for a meeting, and basically the deal on the table was, you know, go create something. And you don't need with minimal oversight. And, you know, at that point I was like, all right, well, I want to make Castlevania, and I wanted to have that anime feel from those OVA anime titles from the 90s that I watched growing up in Hong Kong. And that led to season one.
Anything about season two, or?
I am. I'm not going to right now. You haven't earned it yet.
Fair call. While we're on Netflix and anime, I read that you're also doing Assassin's Creed anime with Netflix. Are you able to tell us anything about that?
Yep. But I'm not going to.
In particular, or are you not able to reveal anything yet?
I can trust you, Timothy. Can.
On to how most of our listeners may know you, and that's through your bootleg universe, with what is likely its most controversial entry with Power Rangers. They went to YouTube and Vimeo, and Sabin refused to play ball. Can you tell us what happened there, and has that spurred you on further and motivated you to change what Hollywood considers its normal? And also, what inspired you to create the bootleg universe?
That's a really interesting thing. You know, I remember walking around the shopping center as a kid, like I'm talking like high school, and I remember very vividly like imagining what I would do if I got to like make content, and I wanted to make I want to make an anthology series with different takes on different brands, like all in different styles, you know, because like you can take Batman, do it as a dark comedy. You can take Batman, do it as a horror movie, like all these different takes. And so I think there was that was a very like monumental, sorry, it's not monumental. It was just a thought I was having. And then on top of that, there was a summer where my family then moved. So I was completely alone for like 3 months, didn't know anybody. And I spent a lot of time on torrent sites downloading things, and one of the things I downloaded that blew my mind was a short film called Batman Dead End. Now, for those of you listening who don't know what Batman Dead End is, it's actually a Batman fan film where Batman fights the Joker for a bit and then gets ambushed by Alien and then gets rescued by Predator. And then fights Predator, and then, you know, it's pretty intense, and especially for when it was made, it was completely insane. And that I saw that, and I was like, this is awesome. So I think the combination of both these things, kind of incepted this concept of fan films into my head. And yeah, I just love fan films. And the interesting thing about fan films is, well, sorry, not about fan films, about the process of, as time went on, you know, my career almost bifurcated. Like there was, sometimes I was making legitimate films that would end up in theaters. Some of them would do very well. And then there were moments where I was making fan films and I didn't have the rights. And I was dropping that shit on YouTube, and like people were like, "What are you doing?" I liked the process of making the fan films better. It felt real. It felt authentic. It felt, you know, like it was a fan making things for other fans versus, you know, a corporately produced product in order to, like, sell Happy Meals. And I think the epiphany I had through this entire journey, you know, starting with the first fan film being The Punisher Dirty Laundry and leading all the way to the latest fan film, which I would argue is Castlevania, is it's kind of like a mindset, right? Like the making stuff by things being made by a fan for other fans. It's a mindset. It's a mantra. It's a way to go about putting these things together. And so the fan films gave birth to this show.
Nice. What is a franchise you would love to take into the bootleg universe?
Scooby-Doo.
That would be interesting. Have you got a sort of idea of what you'd do with Scooby-Doo? Would it be Supernatural?
Hard R.
Like darker and bloodier?
No, hell no. Hell no. Yeah. It'd be like a horror Scooby-Doo.
I would 100% watch that. That'd be great.
Well, and then also, like, let's look at it this way, right? Scooby-Doo is actually set in a post rolling around in this, you know, looking like what is going on exactly? Because these kids should be in school, but they're like in a van going around like hunting bad guys. You know, like have you seen any of these in Scooby-Doo? Like, no. It's like it's all kind of barren, kind of desolate.
And there goes my childhood. I hadn't actually thought about it that way. That's... Wow. Thinking on that, you're 100% right there. It's going to change the way I watch Scooby-Doo now. Another film being released soon globally by YouTube Red, which you co-produced alongside Eminem and Joseph Kahn, is Bodied. Joseph has a reputation in creating visually brilliant videos, particularly for Taylor Swift, which aren't generally as visually dark as Bodied is. Can you tell us what it was like working with big name Eminem and Joseph? And can you tell us what Bodied is about and how the title came to be?
So Bodied is like battle rap terminology. It's kind of started as battle rap terminology. Then it became like hip hop terminology. And now it's kind of entering the vernacular. But what it means is you basically verbally destroy the other person so bad that it's like, you've ended it, you know? So it's like you send someone home in a body bag, right? So to use it in a sentence, if you and I get into a fight and there's like a crowd watching, like a verbal altercation, right? And then I start apart so hard and you walk away, you would then cut to someone saying, oh my gosh, Timothy just got bodied. And the film is about underground battle rap. It's also about free speech and how the concept of free speech has evolved over the last few years.
And what was it like working with Eminem and Joseph?
You got to ask them what it was like working with me. I don't know.
No, it looks very, very different after seeing the trailer. It's not your normal hip hop film, I guess you could say. In a rare twist. Not producing, and as a Carmen fan myself, it was amazing to see you actually worked with Carmen and acted in the music video if you didn't know you. What was it like working with Amy and Nick? And now Amy has gone solo as Queen Herbie. Are you wanting to collaborate given her darker visual aesthetic, which kind of fits your vibe? Yeah.
Wait, really?
And she's gone solo as Queen Herbie now. And it's more of a sweary, darker sort of vibe, which sort of screams your sort of style.
Oh my gosh, yes, thank you for telling me this. I'm like looking this up right now. I totally want to collaborate. I love Amy and Nick. I think they're wonderful, wonderful people and super talented. And Queen Herbie, wow, this is amazing. Yeah,
it's sort of it's more her rap, darker aesthetic that I think we probably saw with No Flex Zone, that when she could literally like spit bars, but this is now just full-on swearing, like, really fast rapping, and it's just... It's more with the visual videos that she's done. Like, there's one in a dark... So when I realised you'd worked on Didn't Know You,
wow.
I was like, this, this is 80s sort of thing to, like, direct something. Because it's very much the visual unusualness.
Wow, I need to reach out to Amy and Nick. Wow, thank you for letting me know. That's freaking amazing. Yeah, I knew she was, like, transitioning into something else. I just, you know, literally the last time I saw Amy and Nick, we met up for dinner, and it was, like, 2016. It was like writing, so it's been a minute.
Yeah, to see you acting, I was watching the video and I was like, wow, that's like, it just put the video in a whole new perspective for me. I was like, there's Amy, there's Nick. I've always loved their music for years. I was like, you actually was in the video, and so I then rewatched it and I was like, wow, it's the story sort of built a bit more since once I realized who was in it, but. Yeah, I was just like, well, what would you try and do with that sort of visuals, I guess?
I have no idea, but yeah, like I'm you just blew my mind on Amy's career transition. That's amazing.
Yeah. I'll do a different topic. When you became the youngest producer with the number one film with The Grey, did that take you by surprise? And what was the general reaction from the industry and people around you?
Did it take me by surprise? Yeah,
were you expecting it to blow up so big?
I don't think it blew. I think some of these things sound better retroactively than they were in the moment. Let me put it that way. Because that really wasn't a big deal back then. You know, you're talking 2012, 2011. You know, that era of Hollywood was all about making four quadrant movies. And by four quadrant movies, I mean things that appeal to the whole family, you know, everyone can go in, right? And and there was this massive fixation on box office versus fandom. So, you know, things like that, they really just didn't matter back then.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Did you ever hear back from The Simpsons about, I think I've got this name right, Apu? Mm-hmm. Did they actually like, because for those that are listening that don't know, Apu's portrayed is very, very Indian. I mean, AD can probably explain it better.
No, why don't you go for it? Go for it. I like the way you explain
it. It's essentially they just racially stereotyped him as a stereotypical Indian. And as AD has pointed out, it's very much not accurate of American Indians in society nowadays because people such as AD speak with an American accent and it's essentially racist portraying him like that. And I guess the question is, did your campaign work and are they going to...
Well, the issue with The Simpsons and Apu isn't so much that it's being presented as a stereotype, right? I don't think stereotypes are necessarily all bad, and I don't think stereotypes are necessarily always offensive. The issue here is Apu is an archetype that was created. It's a manufactured archetype, right? Like, I've never met an Indian person named Apu. I've never met an Indian person with that last name. In fact, I've never met anyone with that accent. That accent is sounds like someone's making fun of an Indian accent, Indian accent. Right? That's the issue. So it's not a stereotype, and it's not a stereotypical portrayal of an Indian person. It's a mockery of how people from a certain snapshot era of a certain time period viewed Indian people, and like they, you know, it was haha, let's poke fun of it. Again, I'm not suggesting that there was any malintent there. It was just that there are no other Indian people on TV. Back then there were no other Indian people on TV. So really the only thing we had was this cartoon character who was mocking us.
Yeah.
And that became like the prevalent, that became the face of Indian people globally. And then you take a lot of the stereotypes, the caricatures that came out after that of Indian people, of brown people in general, they can be traced back to Apu because Apu created this false caricature, this mockery, this false this falsified image. But it became so big, so popular, so prevalent that it just kind of existed as the status quo. And no one really questioned it because, again, there was no systems in place to question it. And therefore, you know, you had Indian actors of American origin, so American citizens who happened to have Indian ancestry, having to go in for auditions in order to play Indian people, quote unquote, but not doing an Indian accent, doing the Apu accent. Because that's what people were led to believe, hey, this is what Indian culture is. So that's the issue. It's not a stereotype issue.
Are they looking at changing that?
It's a falsification issue. I think there's going to be an announcement in the next couple of weeks about the conclusion of the screenwriting contest that you'd mentioned.
At least something's been done though.
That's the main one
that sprung to mind that was similar was Raj from Big Bang Theory in a very similar vein. Although I'm assuming that's probably his normal accent, but that's the other one that sprung to mind when I listened to Abu from the video that you made.
Mm-hmm.
And one last question. One curious title on your CV online is Adi Shankar's Gods and Secrets. Are you able to tell us what's that based off, or is that very under wraps?
No, I can't talk about it. Under wraps. So, anywho. Again, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Tim.
Thank you once again for giving up your time to chat with us, Sadie. Don't forget you can catch Castlevania Season 2 on Netflix globally October 26th and Bodied in US cinemas November 2nd, 2018, with YouTube Red to follow in the near future. And I've been your host, TJ, and we'll see you all in the next episode.